Hi, I'm Aiden.
And I'm Don Carlo, and you're listening to Binge Watchers,
where we talk about everything TV.
Everything?
Everything. Tune in as we discuss a new show every episode.
And we'll decide if it's binge watchable.
This is Binge Watchers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Binge Watchers.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, I think it is our season finale.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We're already here. We're already here.
We are indeed.
But how does it feel, Aiden, to have to be in our season finale so early?
You know what? It's the season's a little shorter, but it was still an absolute ton of fun. We did a lot of experimenting with the show, like multiple shows per episode. It's just been, just like last season, it's been just an absolute blast. I've had so much fun doing this DQ. And
I think we just got better and better at it, you know?
We're
natural at it.
We're seasoned podcasters now, DQ.
Seasoned podcasters. That is amazing. But right now, we have a lot to talk about because we have a really great episode. But first, let's get into news.
Let's do it.
It is our news segment. So today, Aiden and I have one news story to talk about, and Aiden will have a lot of opinions on this because he watches the show.
I do have a lot of opinions on it. Do you want to introduce what it is?
Yes, I will introduce what it is. So recently, Game of Thrones author George R.R. Martin has inked an overall deal with HBO for Game of Thrones and other big fantasy projects for, I think, 5 years or something like that. For many years to come,
mm-hmm.
I should say that, for many years to come. And basically what inking overall deal is, if you're not familiar with, like, television terms, is when a creator signs a deal with a network, so HBO, and then all their projects will go to HBO, and they will, like, produce it and stuff like that. And George R. R. Martin got the big deal.
He did.
HBO. How do you feel about that, Aiden?
You know what? I'm happy for George, but maybe he should finish the books. He should finish the books. Where's book six?
Did he never finish the books? Like, how many years has it been?
Oh my goodness, that's a good question. It's been so long since book five came out. Like, I'm happy for him. But he's writing the new Game of Thrones shows. He's writing a video game called Elden Ring.
He's writing a video game too. How much time does this guy have on his
hands? I don't know, but he's never finishing the books. I've lost hope. I don't think he's ever going to finish writing the Game of Thrones books. I think he's just moved on.
Why is he going to the prequels and he finished the original show, but he didn't finish the books? That's just weird to me.
I don't know. He told the showrunners, D&D, told them the ending of Game of Thrones, and I guarantee you people hated the ending so much that he's gone back and he's rewriting the ending of the books. I guarantee that's what's happened. Like, he saw people...
You say that he screwed them over?
I think he screwed D&D them over. I guarantee you
how?
He was experimenting. He didn't know how he wanted to end it, so he told D&D what his original, quote-unquote, original ending was. And then it happened. People didn't like it, and I guarantee you he saw that and was like, well, back to the drawing board, I guess. It's good that I know that people didn't like the ending before I wrote it.
So, low-key, it was George R. R. Martin's fault, because people blame D&D for the longest, still to this day.
Yeah, I think it's George. Game of Thrones ending. I think George screwed over the show. I'm happy for him. It's a great deal he's got. He gets to keep on writing. I don't know how you could leave a book series like that unfinished. I guarantee you it's not going to get finished. Maybe he's close. Maybe in a week's time, it's like...
I heard he's writing something. I think he's still continuing Game of Thrones during quarantine. But, like, he has a lot of projects on his hands, so I don't know if he's ever going to finish.
He does. He's loaded on projects. He's got 5 prequels in the works. He's got a video game.
5 prequels, yeah. I'm still in the process of understanding and trying to get through the original eight season Game of Thrones run, which I will, but are you going to watch the prequels?
I would watch the prequels. I don't know how good they're going to be, though. I don't know how good these prequels are going to be. I hope they're good, but...
Boom. Now they're confident if they have 5.
Mm-hmm. Good for George. Just go finish the books, please. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know.
All right, but that wraps up our news segment.
Yeah,
yay.
A very heated news segment.
But now we're going to talk about 2 shows that Aiden and I just love.
Oh, yeah.
Just absolutely love. The theme for this episode is miniseries. Yay, miniseries. If you don't know what a miniseries is, it's basically, like, it's a series that is only one season, only exists for one season, and only a certain number of episodes. And the 2 shows that we are going to talk about is The Queen's Gambit from Netflix, which a lot of people a lot of you may have heard about. But the other one you might not have heard of because it's more recent than The Queen's Gambit. And it's, I think it's severely underrated, even though it got critical commercial success, or at least in Britain. And it's an Amazon Prime series called It's a Sin. And I'm so, God, I don't know if I'm mentally prepared or emotionally prepared to talk about these shows.
Yeah, it's both shows are fantastic. I think we'll go into Queen's Gambit first.
Yes, we are going into Queen's Gambit first. So, Aiden, why don't you tell us what the Queen's Gambit is about?
Absolutely. So, in Queen's Gambit, it's actually based on previous literature or previous the happenings.
Yeah, previous literature. Previous literature.
But in this show, this woman, Beth Harmon, has a very tragic backstory, but she's this chess prodigy. And so she goes from living in this orphanage to becoming a world-class chess champion. And the show is just her journey. Becoming a chess champion, and she's played by Anya Taylor-Joy. I believe she won an award for her role as Beth Harmon.
She did in the Golden Globes, which we talked about in our last episode. Yeah. So she, at the, one of the good things about the Golden Globes was that she won, and Queen's Gambit won Best Limited Series.
Yes,
so very well deserved.
Absolutely deserves it. I could not put it down, DQ. Like, every single character was
addicting.
Fantastic. It's so entertaining. I have never had so much fun watching a chess match. It's so, it's so entertaining. Like, and then all the characters are great. The pacing is fantastic. I have no bad things to say about Queen's Gambit.
What I love about The Queen's Gambit is that it's a show that just, like, sort of came out of nowhere. Like, even me, I didn't hear about it before it actually came out. I only heard about it because it started getting so much buzz. And the only, like, big name that was on it was Anya Taylor-Joy. And she's still, like, up and coming. This show did not gain much anticipation before it got released. But then when it got released, it dominated. Like, I think it reached, like, 63 million households. Which is now surpassed by Bridgerton. But before Bridgerton came out, Queen's Gambit was like the number one most watched original show on Netflix.
It beat out The Witcher.
Yeah.
Witcher originally
It beat out The Witcher. Yeah. And The Witcher had like a previous video game. It's like, and it's like chess? Like, why is chess the one that's like being...
Yeah, I will say, DQ, Queen's Gambit took the world by storm. It really did. Like,
it just really did.
Came out of nowhere. And it just blew everyone away.
But what's so good about the show is that it's so well made, like the way that it's shot in like this period piece setting. I think it's like
in the mid-90s, not the 50s, but I believe the 60s and 70s is when it's set.
Yeah, like around that time. And it just got everything right, like the costumes down. I love historical pieces that are within that era, like 60s, 70s, 80s. And it just like nailed it. And I love the main character, Beth Harmon. She's a protagonist that it will go down as one of the best protagonists in a Netflix original because she is so captivating to watch. And what I love is that she is a woman that makes you feel empowered because she's a woman, a minority, that is trying to compete in a very male-dominated game. Like, you never hear about female chess players. That's like something that you don't really hear about, but this one puts it at the forefront. And it's so fun to watch. It's so fun to watch her beat these old white men. It's so much fun.
You know what, DQ? Yeah. You make two really good points there. Like, Beth really is the underdog here. Like, all these people, like, have big standings, big agents, lots of fame. Beth is the underdog in the entire show.
She's the underdog. I love underdog shows, but it does it in such a... Underdog stories, I feel like, can be sometimes cliche, like, oh, a sports team, are they going to win?
But this is a great underdog story. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great underdog. No, I would just say it does it in a more, like, less cliche, unexpected, subversive way, mm-hmm. where it's like, Beth isn't just a chess player. That's not her whole identity. Mm-hmm. She also deals with a lot of stuff. Like, she deals with a tragic backstory mm-hmm. regarding her, why she's an orphan and what happened to her parents. And she also deals with, an important thing is she deals with a bad alcohol addiction that she gets from her foster mom at a very young age. And it's just very, like, sad to watch, but it's also very interesting. And what were you saying, Aiden?
You said something very interesting about the way the show is shot. I am really surprised it didn't get an award for best editing. The way it is edited is just top notch. The show flows fantastically. It's shot so well. I always notice in the chess matches, like, the chess playing is like music. When they put the chess pieces down, it almost flows like a song.
It flows like a song.
It really is.
The chess The chess sequences are so fun to watch. Like, if you haven't watched it, you probably think that we're crazy, but it's true because it's so intense. Like, the thing that I love is that you don't need to know anything about chess. I don't really know much about chess before going into this. I played it before, but I, like, there's so many rules. But she makes so, I don't know, the dialogue, the writing, the way it's shot, the acting. Like, it's about, like, reading their faces and reading their expressions on... And you can tell, like, what's happening.
Yeah. The show almost makes chess look like poetry. It really does.
Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite was when, you know, when she's in the orphanage. This isn't a spoiler, but when she's in the orphanage and she's learning about chess for the first time. And there's this beautiful visual effects scene where she looks up and then she sees, like, the chessboard in the sky, like, in her imagination. Like, you have to watch it to see what we mean. But it's, like, an imagination of how she's moving these chess pieces in her mind. And it's so beautifully shot, and it's so, like, it's just, like, wow. Like, how did they make it? Like, as a media student, I'm like, how did they make that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but the effect has a tragic story, though. Because she has to take a specific... There's, a drug that this orphanage gives these kids to make them docile. And that's... She struggles with alcohol and this drug addiction to these pills. Because when she takes these pills, this drug helps her focus
and she was a
down.
Kid.
And she's a kid.
She was a kid.
Yeah, there's a scene. You know the scene where she gets into the supply of those pills?
Yeah, there's a scene where she tries to, like... She takes extra measures to break into this... Break into, like, the pharmacy office in the orphanage in order to get the drugs, and it's just, like, really hard to watch. Mm-hmm. It's thrilling to watch, too, because it's like, ooh, the show's very intense.
Yeah. It's very, and very intense. A show that I think is, that I would consider top-notch as a show that I can't poke holes in, and I can't poke a single hole in Queen's Gambit. It is so tightly packed. It's honestly, I think Queen's Gambit might be one of the most brilliant shows I have ever watched. All the acting's great.
Yeah.
The characters are just lovable. I think Beth Harmon's just a wonderful character, but she's like an onion, man. She's got layers.
Yeah, I love how all the characters have layers to them, and it's not like, even though it's such a dramatic show, it's so, like, subtle, and it's so, like, I was scared the show was going to be melodramatic, especially the scenes between her and her foster mom. I had expectations of where the show was going, like, oh, like, they're gonna fight a lot, there's gonna be a lot of tension, but no, like, these two actresses, like, are so grounded in reality, and they don't go in, like, extra melodramatic acting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're so, like, grounded, and they're so layered, too, like, and you actually, even though they're not perfect, like, Beth Harmon's not a perfect character, the mom isn't a perfect character, but you understand them, and you feel bad for them, too.
Yeah.
Instead of just making them... Like, I feel like they could have easily made the foster mom, like, a villain, but they don't.
And, yeah, there's a lot of scenes with the foster mom that you do feel bad for her, but the relationship between Beth and her foster mom is definitely one of the highlights.
What I also love is, speaking of characters, Beth meets a lot of other male chess players that... What I love is that they're trying to help her, like, become a better player, but then it subverts that by, like, you know, they're not actually helping her, instead they're being taught by her instead.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's just really interesting back and forth. She had
back and forth. Yeah,
you know, there's a few romantic relationships she has with, like, these two other chess players. One is this world-renowned chess player that she beats, and the other one is this kind of small-time chess player that she meets. But you're right, like, they try to teach Beth stuff about chess, but in the end, they're the ones who end up learning stuff. Because Beth is just... She's a chess prodigy. Like, she's crazy good.
She's a chess prodigy.
Yeah. Honestly, I know Beth has layers. Everyone's an onion in the show. The show is...
Everyone's an onion,
It's a big onion.
You taught me that.
About
you
the onion,
I'm going to use that from now on. The onion metaphor.
I love that metaphor. Like, the show is a freaking onion. Like, it's layers on layers on layers of depth and story and character work and and editing and cinematography. It's a brilliant, brilliant show. I honestly, this might be, these two shows, I'm going to say now, might be the most binge-watchable shows we've ever reviewed on this show. DQ, is this show binge-watchable?
This show is 100% binge-watchable. If you watch our previous episodes, I think it was our best TV shows of 20, it was on both of our lists.
It was, Queen's Gambit was, absolutely.
So you kind of already know. What do you think, Aiden? Is the show binge-watchable?
I don't think it is binge-watchable. No.
Oh, you don't?
I think it's very binge-watchable. Oh, my God.
I was about to say.
There's very few shows I really fall in love with. I fell in love with Queen's Gambit. Like, mwah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful show. beautiful.
I'm so glad that you took my recommendation. This is why, kids, or whoever's listening to this, that's why you should always listen to me.
Yeah, you should listen to
whenever
DQ.
I recommend
DQ
a show.
Has a very, very long standing of really good show recommendations. And the next show we're going to talk about is also a show he recommended me to watch.
The next show we're going to talk about is a new British Amazon Prime show called It's a Sin. And It's a Sin follows these three friends, or this group of friends, majority of them gay, from 1980, and they all intertwine together to form this friend group, trying to make it in London and during the heights of AIDS, during the heights of the AIDS crisis. And it is one of the best. I think we gushed about Queen's Gambit. You might think that's our favorite show, but Aiden and I agree. Like, we actually think this show might be better than the Queen's Gambit. And it might be one of our favorite shows of all time. I think it's on both of our top five lists, right?
Is.
Of, like, best shows of all time. Like, it is phenomenal.
Yeah. Queen's Gambit is an inspiring show, and It's a Sin is also inspiring, but It's a Sin might be one of the most depressing shows I have ever watched in my entire life. It is a roller coaster of emotions. It's got everything that Queen's Gambit has, but it is might be the most tightly paced show I've ever seen. There's no goofing around, no filler. You are in the action. It's 5 episodes long. I finished it in 2 days. It was a short sitting. And I don't cry that much at television, and I cried at the show.
Me too. I literally don't cry that much in television shows, like, never. But this show, I kid you not, every single episode almost had, like, I had tears in my eyes. Tears in my eyes.
Yeah. In this 5 episodes, you get to know this group of characters so, so well. You think you've known them for like 10 seasons of the show.
Yeah, 10 seasons. And the show is 5
episodes.
It's 5 episodes. That is what's so amazing about the show. It is one of the most beautiful ensemble casts I've ever seen in television. It is glorious. The thing I love about the show is that it is both so joyful, well, and so dark at the same time. Like, you know what's gonna happen because it's set in the AIDS crisis, and you know how dark this is gonna be. But it's just like, there are also scenes when they're just having fun and they just wanna be happy and they're just living their life, like, you know, drinking, partying, having sex. Like, it's just...
They're living their lives. Honestly, me and DQ were floored by the show. It's a beautiful piece of art. It really is. That's how I would describe
beautiful
it. It's just every. Yeah. It's. I won't lie to you when I'll say it's a very tragic show, but it highlights the struggles of being gay in the AIDS epidemic, and it's heartbreaking because there are scenes where you see the prejudice in society come to fruition, and it breaks your heart to learn that this is how people whose sexual preference were different of how they were treated, and it will break your heart. You'll love these characters, and I agree with you, this is probably one of the greatest ensemble casts I've ever seen in a show.
Oh,
but
my god,
man, DQ, it's just this, like, these characters and this show is an onion. Layers on layers. The best editing. I have some of the best editing I've ever seen. Best cinematography. There's a scene in the show where Richie breaks... We were talking about this. Where Richie breaks the fourth wall. And it's just...
But why does he break the fourth wall?
So, the AIDS epidemic, and I believe in the second episode, is starting to come to London, to Britain. And Richie discovers it. And he doesn't believe it's real. He's like, there can't be a disease that kills gay men.
That only kills gay men, right? Men. Yeah,
it's a flu. Yeah. It's created by the government, and that's what the third wall and it breaks the third wall to tell the audience that. And it's sad because it's really, I'm gonna say, dark foreshadowing.
But it's just so beautifully shot, like the way that he breaks the fourth wall and the dialogue, like the guy that plays Richie. Oh my
he's
god,
a phenomenal
like, he's acting
actor.
This amazing actor. He needs to become big after this show because he's just brilliant. But yeah, like the way that the club scenes are lighted, the lighting, the choreography, the way the camera moves, like it's just every aspect of filmmaking that is in the show is just brilliantly done. And yeah, I love it so much. I don't know.
There's a lot happens in 5 episodes, which I'm astonished by, because each episode is only like 45 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah.
But
talk about brilliant pacing.
Yeah,
and like,
I think
having so many layers despite being only 5 episodes.
For a 5-episode show, it needs to be tightly paced, and I think it does better than Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, and Queen's Gambit had more episodes, yeah. So it's just, it's even a big, it's a bigger accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And, oh, it's just so beautiful. And I love that we're talking about this and we're bringing this to, like, the forefront, because I feel like so many people will just overlook it or not know what it is because it's a British show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you, yeah. I saw ads for this show, but if you didn't tell me to watch it, I probably never would have watched it. It makes me so sad to say it, that I think this show is going to be a sleeper hit. It's going to be a cult following.
Sleeper hit.
It's going to be a cult classic.
Yeah,
I don't
definitely.
Think a lot of people are going to learn and are going to know about this show.
Yeah, which is so
sad.
So sad, especially since the creator, I don't know if you know this, but the creator is actually a really big queer showrunner. He's one of the biggest queer showrunners, and he's like an advocate for like queer representation. Almost all his shows, I look up to this guy because almost all his shows are gay. Like, do you know the show Queer as Folk from the late 90s, early 2000s?
I'm pretty sure, no, I'm sorry, DQ, I don't think I heard
no,
that one.
No, that was a breakthrough show because that was one of the first shows to ever, if not the first show to ever center around gay men. Like, the first show to do that. It was like, if we wouldn't have It's a Sin if Queer as Folk did not exist. We would not have gay characters on TV if Queer as Folk did not exist. Hmm. So, and, well, this one you should know about. I wish. He's who I look up to, because I also want to make TV shows when I'm older.
It's
and this is a very inspiring show for me.
And you know what, DQ? I completely agree with you. It's an inspiring show. It really is people. It's people persevering through this very awful, this is just awful tragedy. There's a few scenes that I think we can talk about, though, that really, really stand out to me. And one scene is where there's a protest and the police show up.
Yes.
And it's a heartbreaking scene. And I honestly, I can't even, it's just, yeah, it's police brutality against these peaceful protesters in London. The people on the street are telling them to get off the street. They're not even listening to what they're saying. And it,
and they're calling them really bad names. Like, homophobia was rampant back in the 80s. Like, in fact, it, I think, pushed back gay rights because of AIDS. And because there's so much, the thing is, AIDS, there's so much fear. Whereas, like, the difference between AIDS and, like, for example, the coronavirus, which we're still living in, is that coronavirus, like, we all knew that it can affect anybody. We all knew it can affect anybody. AIDS and HIV, people just presumed that because majority gay people got it, and being gay was taboo back then, people thought that it only affected them, and it was presumed that because it only affected them that it's not that dangerous, and that there's so much fear and stigma about it, and that people think because there's so much homophobia, people said that they deserved it, that gay people deserve this disease. And it's just so
sad
to witness, because anybody can get HIV, I think.
Anyone can get HIV.
HIV. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of scenes in the show, Aiden, that I don't know, reminded me of like what we're living in now. Like when they're like, should we wear, there's so much paranoia. Like there's characters where they're like, should we wear gloves? Yeah, should we wear masks? Like how do I touched something that someone with AIDS touched. Like, should I like wash my hands? What do I need? Do I need to get tested?
Yeah.
Like it's just, it evokes that same paranoia that we're living in.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's so great that the show's coming out now,
yeah,
and it's the perfect time to watch it.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is scary, especially back then, is, like, with coronavirus, medical science has advanced, like, 30 years.
Yeah, that's true.
But back then, people did not know a lot about what AIDS was, and so there was so much stigma. And you make a great point about safe sex. They, in the show, they weren't having safe sex. In fact, there was a scene that highlights this with Richie. He's having sex with this guy, this other actor he met, and he's putting on a condom, and I guess he gets turned off, and then he says, oh, I'm clean, it's fine. There it is right there. They did it without protection. Like, if they put that condom on, Richie, it probably could have avoided potential consequences.
What hurts the most is you care about these characters so much because they're like onions. I love that metaphor. They're like onions. There's so many layers to them. Like,
and they're so likable. You've known them for so long, and then stuff starts happening. It starts unraveling.
Because they work like real friend groups. Like the way, like they flow so naturally together. Like the way that they interact. They have like certain languages where they, or certain phrases that's like inside jokes that only they know. La.
Yeah. See, they have inside jokes. Yeah, absolutely.
They have inside jokes. Yeah, you'll know what I mean when I say la.
I know what you mean. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
It hurts my heart. It hurts my heart.
And you make a great point. The cast has so much chemistry with each other. They gel so well, and that's what makes them so likable. They have these little dinner scenes where they're just eating and talking and making jokes, and it just breaks your heart. Because, you know, like, stuff is going to happen. And they talk about, what's going on, how it's going to stay in America if it doesn't.
But I also don't want to turn people off by saying that it's all depressing, because it's actually not.
It's lots of inspiring moments. Yeah.
There's a lot of inspiring moments. There's a lot of fun. Like, there's actually a sense of humor. British people are so funny, if you haven't noticed. If you didn't know, British people are so funny. And there's so much life to it. Like, before the AIDS stuff, like, starts happening, like, you just see these characters have fun. The show shows what we're missing, too, in this time. Like, it shows, like, it teaches you to never take life for granted and to just have fun with it and to not take it so seriously because, you know, you never know what's gonna happen.
Can you say that again?
Don't take stuff for granted. Don't take life for granted. Don't take life for granted. That is the overall message of this whole episode. There's one more thing I want to talk about. Like, as a gay person, like, there's a scene in this that just, like, destroyed me. For my friends, if you're, like, one of my close friends, you know what I'm gonna be talking about. I used to have this big, big crush on this guy. I don't know if I'm exposing myself on Binge Watchers. he was my coworker. And, during, like, when COVID was, like, not as bad, I had a crush on this guy for, like, almost a whole year. And I wanted to confess to him. And back in the summer, we went out to see a movie, and then we, like, after the movie, we, you know, went to, like, this baseball diamond, like, bleachers. It was a very, like, it's a really intimate setting because we're in the park. It's, like, summer. We both looked really good. And we just stayed there and talked for, like, until, like, nighttime, and we just, like, and then I confessed to him, and I told him how I felt. And it was very, like, an intense moment. And I knew that he was, like, not going to be into me because, you know, he's straight.
A similar thing happens like that in the show.
Yeah, a similar thing happens. I won't say the character because this is deep into the series. But there's a scene where one of the characters, they know that they have a limited amount of time left. And they go and tell one of their former crushes that they're in love with them. And it's, whereas mine was, like, in, like, the bleachers in a park, theirs was in a beach in this very intimate setting. And it's such a heart-wrenching scene. And, like, not to say I don't have AIDS, I'm not gonna die. But, like, I knew that after I confessed that I was never gonna talk to this person again, and it really hurt me. Seeing this character do that, this character that I love do the same similar thing that I did, like, I don't know if I don't think you understand how much I felt seen in that moment. How much I felt seen. This is why I love television so much, because I felt
DQ.
So seen. Stop. You're making
it's DQ, you make an amazing point here. And I think the show really shows us how important representation is in television and in media in general. I mean, it can have such profound impacts, and it's just important. Like, that's life. Life is diverse.
Life is diverse, and like what we talked about with the Golden Globes, it's not reflected sometimes. It's not reflected sometimes, yeah.
And you make brilliant points. It's just, I don't have too much else to say. It's just, it's one of the most beautiful pieces of art I've ever witnessed.
On a last note, like, I love that we're both talking about this, like, from different perspectives, because I'm a queer person of color.
And Aiden I'm a pasty white guy. I'm a pasty straight white guy.
Yeah, but it still affects you. That's what I love about the show, is it still affects you.
Yeah. DQ, it doesn't even, I don't think it matters who you are when you're watching the show.
Matter.
You will be affected profoundly by it.
I see a lot of myself in the character of Richie, who's the main character. I think a lot of queer people is. Like, he's literally me. Like, Aiden texted me and saying, oh, I love the show. And I was like, isn't Richie me? And he was like, I was about to say, Richie reminds me a lot about you.
He does. When I first saw the episode and you first see Richie, I'm like, oh my God, that's DQ. That's British DQ.
Yeah, literally, he's bubbly, he's energetic,
he's lively.
He's lively, he's skinny, he's a bottom. He's a bottom. And the other characters literally remind me of my friends, like Richie's female best friend is Jill. I have a lot of you guys know who you are. The female, my female besties that are watching this, Geneva. She's literally Geneva. If we were in the AIDS crisis together,
Roscoe is the best. I'm gonna say this right now. Roscoe is my favorite character.
Roscoe is the best. Yeah, Roscoe. I also like Roscoe. Like, he's very in touch with his femininity. That's another thing I relate to.
And I relate. He's very confident. He knows who he is.
And I relate to Collins just like pureness, you know? I relate to that.
Yeah,
Collins. Enjoying the simple things in life.
Yeah.
Enjoying the things, simple things in life.
He has, like, Collins never has big jobs in the show. He's got very simple jobs. And yeah. I think that's what makes him, so likable. It really is.
Yeah. But that is all that we have for today. I think we have to cut it now because I'm going to get emotional.
Yeah, I'm going to get pretty emotional too. Yeah, this is also our season. Yeah. This is our season finale, and I just want to say thankful that I get an opportunity to do this with you. Seriously. Yeah. And I'm really excited. We're going to try and go for a season 3, and I'm really looking forward to doing this again. And I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope you enjoy, and we really encourage you to go watch these shows. And I think on that note, I have to say, It's a Sin, one, I think is the best show we have ever reviewed so far for binge watchers.
Yeah.
And it might be also the most binge watchable.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. But thank you all for listening.
Thank you all so much for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.
And we'll see you next season.